I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal!
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome back to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how goes the things?
The things, they go the very well. They are the good. I'll tell you my favorite thing. So Matt's into old FIFA. He's playing FIFA 13 right now. And I'm playing current FIFA, and I play foot mode, which is, you know, is an online mode where, you spend enough coins and you get better players. I got Zlatan Ibrahimovic today. So my starting favorite MLS foot team right now is Zlatan up top, Giovinco underneath, Valeri and Bradley behind him, Nagby and Alessandrini on the wings. And then a bunch of European players at the back line because there are no good MLS players. But anyhow, that's my big excitement for today. And then the other excitement for today is really kind of random stuff going on Twitter. Matt, did you see this thing on Twitter with Vic Lombardi and Woody Page?
I did not. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Vic Lombardi was, I guess, downtown in Lodo for this weekend for when the Cubbies were in town against the Rockies.
Yes.
And one of the Lodo bars right around the stadium was flying Cubs flags out front. And Lombardi was indignant. Indignant, I say. And him and Woody Page got into it.
I think I know what you're talking about because I can't remember its name, but I know it's a Blackhawk bar. And they have a big neon sign of the Chicago Blackhawks, the NHL team from Chicago's logo. And like every 30 minutes on like a Saturday night, they play I think it's Chelsea Dagger is their goal song.
All right.
I'd be willing to bet that it's that. I think it's on Laramere, but I can't remember the name of it.
That's my question of like, do you think it's appropriate in the immediate vicinity of Coors Field to have bars openly supporting other teams in the National League? Is that like, and to expand the conversation, like, is it okay to have local bars in Colorado supporting non-Colorado teams or flying the flag of non-Colorado teams? And I'm not saying like, you know, a Manchester United bar, because like, it's a different country, but like, you know, could someone come in and, if Seattle was playing the Rapids one weekend, be a Seattle Sounders bar for the day? Is that cool? Is that treason?
Is it I guess it depends on how the bar operates, for example. Like, if it's owned by a Chicago owner. Like, I know there's a restaurant right close to there that's not what the bar that I'm thinking of, that's really close, that does, like, Chicago-style hot dogs, for example. Like, if there's a particular theme that they're already existing, you know, the 350-some-odd days a year in which the Rockies are not playing the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
Then in that sense, that I would think that it wouldn't be totally kosher.
So that's essentially Woody Page's side. And the other piece to that is the reality with the Rockies specifically, that like half the people who go to the stadium any given day are transplants from somewhere else who are rooting for the other team. Like, you know, if you're old like me, I'm 41 years old. I grew up a Dodger fan when I was a kid in Los Angeles, and I started rooting for the Dodgers in 1984 when I was 7 years old, you know, or 8 years old. And the Rockies weren't going to exist for another decade, you know? You can't expect fan loyalty to show up, you know, and for people, like, in Colorado to, like, convert. You know, a lot of people were listening to the Dodger broadcast in the 70s and 80s before the Rockies existed. So, I don't know. That's my take, is that, like, the Rockies are still too new, he says 30 years on, to really be in a position. Is it 30? 20.
20. 20. I think they were 97.
25 was last year. For
yeah.
Them, right? Yeah. They're still too new, but I don't know. It's an interesting. The other piece that was funny out of that is just Vic Lombardi and Woody Page thrown down online. Hey, they both have Twitters. Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it, Mark, like, if you're going to do it, completely own it. Like, if it's the establishment I'm thinking of, it is a known Chicago Blackhawks bar.
Yeah.
It is owned by Chicago transplants in there. Like, they play the Chicago Blackhawks goal song. I'm assuming, like, if you're going to do it, then I would say completely own it. You know, I've been, in my spare time, I've been microbrewing a whole lot. If spontaneously life had me, you know, dropped in the middle of some country with a bunch of American expats, and I were like, I was going to open up a bar or something, like, it's like, okay, I'm opening up Lodo's Bar and Grill. That is not it. That is not what I'm thinking of. So I don't know what's up with that place.
For those of you on the pod, I just showed Matt the picture. He didn't just have clairvoyance at some moment. But
yeah, so if it's Lodo's Bar and Grill, as far that's not what I'm thinking of. If those aren't Chicago owners, if they weren't playing Blackhawks games in the mid-2000s when Tony Amati was their captain and they were finishing at the bottom of the Western Conference in the NHL, then you're total bandwagoners, and I judge you severely. But if, like, I got dropped off randomly in some foreign country that didn't speak English, and there were a bunch of American expats, and I were to open a bar, guess what I'm playing on whenever the normal time is that MLS games are coming on, Mark?
What?
I'm buying ESPN Plus,
or
whatever the equivalent is in that foreign country, and I am playing... I'm playing MLS games, so to speak, and I will play Rapids games when they are on, whether they are losing 34 games a season or winning 34 games a season, and I will completely own up to that.
Right. I don't care who your bar supports as a team, as long as I don't have to walk in and ask them to change the channel to an MLS game. If a bar earns my eternal loyalty if I don't have to walk in and ask to put a TV on a soccer game. You know, my favorite bars, my favorite restaurants in Denver, places where I can walk in and know soccer is already on the TV. And worst case scenario, I have to ask to change from a championship game to a La Liga game, or from a Bundesliga game to an EPL game. Like, that's my bottom. Like, the bar that's totally unacceptable in my world is the one where you walk in and say, can I put on the Rapids game? And they say, who are the Rapids? You know, like, that's...
Yes.
And we all know that that's still a reality in this media market. Okay. All right, onward.
Okay, Mark, so we actually had an official banter item, and as usual, we got off topic.
What?
So I have to ask you, as an Arsenal fan, your thoughts on the fact that finally Wenger is out. 1 month from today, Arsene Wenger will not be the manager of Arsenal. And furthermore, Mark, what do you think befalls him? Because I actually learned about this when I was on Twitter and I saw it, and it was quote tweeted by somebody who quote tweeted it and said hashtag Wenger for USMNT.
I mean, Wenger's, I'm almost, that's not going to happen for starters. I would guess that Wenger becomes the general manager, for lack of a better term, for PSG or Marseille or
some other French
or
club.
Lyon, one of the big three in France, because he doesn't want to really deal with the coaching, and he wants to have a great job where he gets paid a couple $1 million a year to make a few decisions a year and not work real hard. And I think in France he'll be allowed to do that. That's what I would do if I were him. The better question in the universe is who succeeds him at Arsenal. And what, as a rabbi, one of the big things that we were always taught is, and it applies for soccer managers as well, you don't want to follow
greatness,
a massive figure like Arsene Wenger. You
don't want to be the David Moyes or Kurt Anolfo dynasty.
And Kurt Anolfo, poor Kurt Anolfo. That guy could not manage his way out of a paper bag with any of the teams he had. But there's a thing that happens in congregations, synagogues and churches, where if you have a really charismatic, really successful rabbi, pastor, minister, whatever, you don't follow them up with someone. You hire an interim for a year. And their job is, like, basically to, like, play okay, but not aspire to greatness. I mean, it's basically Steve Cook with the Rapids last year, although Steve Cook was hired internally. Steve Cook was in a position where if he won every freaking game after Mastroeni was fired, they would maybe have hired him on as the full-time coach. But realistically, he was just, you know, warming the bench. He was just sitting and waiting till things went on. I really hope Arsenal does an equivalent of that, right? because the alternatives are they're going to hire someone fairly big or fairly famous who will probably not burn things up and will probably get fired.
They'll burn
after
out
a
within
year.
2 years.
Yeah, I mean the obvious like candidates are like Thomas Tuchel.
Carlo Ancelotti.
Ancelotti, who's been, yeah, he's been out there for a while. Patrick Vieira is being bandied about by MLS folks, and I think that that's a very good idea, but you don't want Vieira.
Serena for Arsenal!
That will never happen. Now, most Americans just aren't thought of in, on that terms, but for Vieira, it just doesn't make sense, because it's he's chum for the Sharks, you know, he won't have a good first year. I think he's a great manager, and I think he's prepared. I don't think, you know, I don't think that there are, people say like, oh, is he ready? You know, like, isn't it a big step up from Major League Soccer to the Premier League? I don't think so. These guys aren't like.
I mean, he had the youth teams that he was coaching at Manchester City walking over other teams. I think just the bigger factor is one thing that I think will hurt Arsenal fans ultimately is, you know, the same people who've been crying Wenger out for the past 4 years or a decade or however long are now going to start approaching it from a standpoint of appreciating what he did from a trophy standpoint. Yeah. And then also appreciating the fact that in the Premier League this year, Arsenal had the seventh biggest budget in terms of transfer fees spent and overall salary. And the fact that like he consistently got this team top four in the league and consistently in the knockout stages of Champions League in a lot of ways was a minor miracle. So the fact is, like, no matter what happens, unless somebody blows the doors off something, like, there's a point at which you've existed for so long that there's inertia of your dynasty. And, oh, we can't fire Wenger because he's Arsene Wenger and everything that he's done. Whereas a new manager doesn't necessarily get that. And I think that person is set up for disappointment just given where Arsenal is financially in the table.
One of the many things I like about Major League Soccer is that it's just the levels of expectation for what you need to accomplish to be considered successful are reasonable and manageable, right? You win a U.S. Open Cup, you had a great year, you know? You finish top four in the table, go to the playoffs, and make it through the knockout round, you had a really great year. And that's okay, especially if you do that 3 years in a row, people start to worry. But, you know, that's a good, solid year for any team. And also because of parity in the league, you know, any team that does that is respected, whether you're spending a lot of money like Atlanta or whether you're not like Columbus. In Europe, the metric is totally whacked, right? Barcelona are going to be thought of this year as a failure.
Yeah.
There's no way around the fact that a quarterfinal or a semifinal departure?
Quarterfinal
departure for them in Champions League is a failure, right? They just won Copa del Rey. They're going to win without almost any shadow of a doubt La Liga, and that's a disappointment. That's insane, right? Like, in any other world, that's... And
especially if Real Madrid wins their... I guess this... Would this be their 12th now?
Something like that. I
haven't been able to keep streaks.
Wasn't last year the Deca?
No, was it against Atleti last year? The Decima?
Boy, that's you have deep knowledge of multiple leagues. I don't think I can keep up with you intellectually on this.
I mean,
levels.
Mark, I've already like I had a Grimsby Town reference on Twitter today.
Grimsby
so
Town.
Yeah, okay, we need to let's okay, Mark. The Colorado Rapids were defeated this past Saturday in the opening match of the 2018 Rocky
Mountain
Cup.
Can we talk about Arsene Wenger some more?
No, I'm sorry. This is a Rapids podcast, not one of the 50,000 Arsenal podcasts out there.
Point taken.
Yes, the Rapids had a very successful opening 20 minutes with a domination in possession and five corners that they ended up taking, and then everything turned on its head in the 20th minute. Maybe it was the 18th. The red card was accredited in the 20th minute. Real Salt Lake gets on the counter. Savarino sends a shot in with Tim Howard being the only Rapids player back. Little bit of a questionable in terms of, you know, did it actually go off his arm first or his body first? His second game as a referee for in Major League Soccer, the head official gives a red card to Tim Howard in the 20th minute. Joseph Dickerson, thank you. For the next 60 minutes, the Rapids proceed to park the bus and do a tremendous job in it. Only really good opportunities right before the end of the first half with Rusnak sending a ball ball over the bar. And then in the 81st minute, everything fell apart, Mark. Tommy Smith is called for a handball in the box. João Plata converts on the PK. Counterattack in the 89th minute. Demir Krylatch gets his first goal in Major League Soccer with a nice little shot curling around Zach McMath. Nothing they really could have done. The Rapids were out of position. And then 2 minutes into stoppage time, Albert Rusnak with a shot around the wall. To ultimately seal the deal. The Rapids are now 3 goals down and 3 points down in the 2018 iteration of the Rocky Mountain Cup. After, Mark, we were both very optimistic about their chances of getting 3 points last pod. What was your good thing from this past Saturday?
I don't have a good thing. Nothing was good. That was bad. And I'll tell you what, like, for me, I'm gonna do three bad things because I'm a terrible human being and I don't play by the rules. The worst thing for me, or the hardest thing for me, was that there were a lot of really good soccer games on, or there were a lot of exciting soccer games. There were a lot of goals and a lot of soccer games.
46 goals this past weekend, including Friday night.
Right, that Friday night game was with Kansas City scoring 6 goals, just obliterating Vancouver, who looked terrible even before they had 2 red cards. There were so many good soccer games this weekend. I mean, I was so excited for the Atlanta game, you know? Like, there were just lots of... And as soon as that red card came on for the Rapids, for Tim Howard, in my mind I went, I should switch over to another game. I am on Twitter, the Rapids Rabbi. I have watched every Rapids game for the last 4 years, maybe 5 years, twice, at least, you know, in order to review the game and recap it for writing. Like, my gut reaction was, change the channel. That's how bad it was to see a red card. So there's nothing good, you know? And if I really want to say it, I could say they really defended well for 60 minutes. But we lost 3-0, so, like, parking the bus and putting 9 guys behind the ball, there's nothing inspiring about that if you end up losing in the end. So my good thing is nothing. There was nothing good about that game. Matt, what was your good thing?
Okay, so I kind of, this game I would refer to in three acts, and I would call it, like, literally it was the good, it was the great, the good, all things considered, asterisk, and then the terrible, and so it basically goes in chronological order. The first 20 minutes, I was convinced the Rapids were going to win that game and be absolute dominant. I think outside of the opening 10 minutes against Sporting Kansas City, this is the best that team has looked. Jack Price was phenomenal. Dominic Baggio was creating opportunities. The wingbacks were running circles around other teams. Enzo Martinez was bowling his way through Kyle Beckerman, which I thought was fantastic. You know, if Jack McBean's remotely sharper on either the header opportunities, it's the 14th minute and the Rapids are up 2-0 and absolutely gunning on RSL. And then, you know, goals change games, so do red cards. And then so the middle, at that point it was... Statistically, I did not look up the stat, unfortunately, because I was lazy, but I'm pretty convinced that a red card with 60 minutes to go in the game in MLS, you're pretty much doomed. After that red card, it was like, okay, best they can hope for is a nil-nil draw, so to speak. And through the 80th minute, they were doing a fantastic job of absorbing pressure and preventing the final ball from going in, and then just ultimately everything fell apart. To answer your question directly, I thought the middle 60 minutes of defending, all things considered, were fantastic. I was at training today, folks. We will have a session of Field 20 later in the pod where I get some updates, but Hudson said, you know, I'm not bitter about the game, all things considered. I think in the opening 20 minutes, we had a fantastic performance. Given the expectations and the situation after the red card, I thought we had a fantastic following 60 minutes. It just all fell apart. So, good 16 minutes. I thought Zach McMath did a really good job. I thought Axel Huberg was fantastic as well, you know, given that he wasn't really a starter going into the season. So, that was my good thing. Mark, was there any other bad thing you had, or can I get to
that? Yeah, there are other bad things.
Okay. I mean,
there's many bad things.
Okay, go into the many bad things.
Well, you know, the Tommy Smith handball was
bad.
was really rough, and it's hard to look back and think and see that play
and rationalize what he was thinking.
Exactly. And it's not the first time. So in the we mentioned this, the Kansas City game, they were 2 red cards,
And the red cards occurred basically, like, off to the side, where a player hit another player. And I don't know what happened with the second red card.
It would have been, I think it was Juarez who had his hands around Johnny Russell's throat. And and Reyna basically, like, Greco-Roman style, like, body through Russell, so to speak. So you had a body slam, and you had a choke slam, essentially.
Yeah, my comment on Twitter was, slapping a ball with your hand in the box in the modern era with 17 cameras in the game is like walking into Best Buy and shoplifting an iPhone after you've looked up at the ceiling at all those big black domes that have cameras in them and gone, huh, there's a bunch of cameras. I'm sure I can get away with stealing this iPhone, right? Like, you can't get away with anything in modern soccer anymore, except in the EPL where they don't have VAR. But, like, you can't get away with anything. So all players need to walk into situations and be drilled on a situation and understand in their head, like, I am down in the box and the ball is about to go by me. Sticking out my hand is a bad idea. They need to do that. I don't, like you said, I don't know what he was thinking, but he really needed to be in a position where he thought better of it. It's a shame. And I'm sure there was an immediate lizard brain reaction that basically said,
ah, there's the ball. Stop the ball.
Right? Stop the ball. And Court Ford had the same situation last year at Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
where he was in the box and he was on the ground and his arms were underneath him. And the ball was right there, so he rolled over the ball. And it was, like, semi-intentional and semi-not, but there's this, it's understandable and it's not. They need to do better. So that was the really bad thing, is that, like, they really did absorb for 60 minutes really well, like you mentioned, until Tommy Smith made a really poor decision. So, I mean, when's the last time you saw a soccer game, I can't remember one, where the total undoing of the team was both by handball? There were two handballs, and it ruined the game for Colorado. I haven't seen that. What was your bad thing?
I'm going to agree on the PK.
There's a new bad thing.
I'm going to agree on the PK. I'm going to say the red card, just overall the situation and everything of it. The Rapids have done a very good job, at least when they've been outnumbered. The back center, back three, has always been very organized in terms of getting on the counterattack, and they essentially just let Savarino get in through after only maybe two or three passes to get upfield. So the fact that happened, I think he receives the ball maybe right on the edge of where you would consider the start of the final third from midfield, and the fact that at that point that he gets the ball, he's at best for the Rapids level with Tommy Smith, so that the only Rapids player back is Tim Howard, was bad. I'm not necessarily blaming Tim at that point, because at that point he has to come off his line and try and make the stop, because if he stays in his goal, like, he's a sitting duck, so to speak. I thought he made a good effort at trying to make that happen. I feel like the red card is a little bit of a weird situation, because, you know, depending on the angle that you look at, maybe it goes off his arm, maybe it doesn't go off his arm, maybe it goes off his body first. Does it count as a handball if it goes off his abs first? But, you know, if his arm is tucked in right against his body, his elbows out a little bit on the views that I've seen from the angle, then, you know, that hand is in a natural position. I think if his body is completely parallel with his torso and tucked in, even if it goes primarily off his arm first, I don't think that gets called on him. So I think the defense could have handled things a little bit better. I thought the midfield could have tried to disrupt that play to prevent the fire such that it didn't start and didn't need to be put out. I thought, in terms of the blame pie, I don't put that 100% on Howard, and I could put it significantly on several other players. And then the third goal, we'll get to this in field 20 when I ask Zach McMath about it, but just a really poor placement in terms of setting up for the play and poor execution in trying to defend it. So all those things were bad. We've kind of addressed pretty much every big thing from it, but do you have any big things we haven't addressed yet, Mark?
Big thing. No, I think, you know, in my heart of hearts, I want to pretend like this game didn't happen, you know? And I guess the big thing, I'll say this. The big thing is every soccer team has one of these a year. Every team, right? No matter how freaking good you are, you're going to have, I wouldn't even call it a clunker, one where a freak occurrence ruins everything, right? Like,
and there's nothing you could have done about it.
A couple years ago, there was an SKC game for the Rapids, which, you know, got, or maybe it was another team that was playing SKC, where it got suspended after 60 minutes with lightning, and then they had a 2-hour delay, and then they continued to play the game. You know, Tim should have done better by not committing handball by going in slide tackling for the ball out of the box, but like. It happens, you know? Joe Nasko had this game a couple years ago.
The first minute red card against the Galaxy.
The fastest red card in MLS history, right? And probably always will be. You know, stuff happens, as a brilliant Zlatan Ibrahimovic said this week. Or he said, we played like stuff. But you know, you get one of these a year. The goal as an MLS team is don't have five of these a year. That's the big thing, you know? And I think the Rapids in 17 and in 2015, they had five of these a year. They had five catastrophic meltdown games. You get one catastrophic meltdown game a year, and you move on, and hopefully it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Joseph Dickerson, just his second head official appointment in an MLS regular season game ever. A lot has been made about VAR and its execution, the lack of clarity in terms of what's being reviewed, what was the call on the field prior to the review, what was the ultimate decision afterwards, how that's communicated to the fans in the stadium, to the media members in the press box or on TV, and overall the TV audience and everything. For a second game official in terms of managing the situation, independent of what you think about the two plays and everything, how he handled immediately stopping the game, going to his ear and going to the sideline official, discussing and then choosing to go to VAR, I thought that was well managed in terms of managing the result and making sure things didn't get out of hand as a result of VAR disorganization.
There was a little delay after the Tommy Smith handball.
That's because they were waiting for the play to end, so to speak.
But you saw in the game that, like, the RSL players were kind of flipping out. They were like, we gotta blah, 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 blah. You know, they were freaking out. And then he did review it. But, yeah, I hear a lot of people complaining about VAR and it ruins the game or whatever. I thought it helped this game.
I would agree.
I think they got all their calls right.
I would agree.
I think this rookie, you know, head ref did a good job. I think.
Agree.
And I'm the aggrieved fan who lost the game 3-0, so I don't know. But, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you on that, Mark. And I think for all that we make about VAR, you know, like, there was an incident, I want to say, with Baldomero Toledo after an Atlanta game where there was a call on the field, VAR reversed it, and then the disciplinary committee reversed the VAR review. I want to say it was a red card to Kendall Waston for Vancouver at Atlanta, but don't quote me on that. And so, you have to question the use and the execution of VAR when the disciplinary committee is overturning it, basically saying the review on the field was completely wrong.
Well, Toledo is clearly one of our best referees since he's going to Russia, right? I mean, obviously, just like Mark Geiger is one of our other best referees because he's also going to Russia, right? Clearly, if we're sending him to Russia, they must be great referees, he said incredibly sarcastically.
The Colorado Rapids have their first nationally televised game this coming Sunday. Mark Goodman, Sunday, April 29th, 2 p.m. at DSG Park. They will be taking on Jason Kreis and Orlando City SC. Orlando's off to a very exciting but very streaky start so far in 2018. They score a lot of goals. They also give up a whole lot of goals. They have Dom Dwyer, who listeners will remember from his time with Sporting Kansas City. Over the offseason, they also acquired the services of Sasha Kljestan, the number 10 for New York Red Bulls, and was their captain last year after Dax McCarty was traded away. And then also Justin Miram, who was part of the blow-up over the offseason with Columbus Crew. Orlando has spent a lot of money. They have a lot of exciting attacking players. They also have a couple young players who are making a really big deal. They have Stefan Pino, who is formerly of Miami FC in the NASL, who actually scored a hat trick against Orlando in the Open Cup. And then also, I don't remember his first name, but the draft pick Mueller, who celebrates terribly, a poor impression of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Chris
Mueller has also been really exciting. They've got Yoshi Otun from Peru, who Anthony Hudson will be familiar with from his time with New Zealand, where they played Peru to try and get to the World Cup. And then they've got a bunch of guys in defense who don't necessarily know what they're doing. Mark Goodman, Orlando likes to win games 3-2. The Rapids prefer to win them 1-0. Yep. What is your thoughts on Orlando and how the Rapids are approaching them going into Sunday?
I have no idea how the Rapids are going to approach them, but I definitely find this team to be an exceedingly dangerous team that Colorado is going to face. I think you laid out a lot of these players who are really, really talented, but I don't think the challenge that Colorado has in front of them is really, really big. This team is very, very good right now and is just very, very good by themselves. You know, you mentioned their best players, but you didn't quite kind of like sell them in how ridiculously well they're doing. So I'll sell it. Mueller has, I think, 1 goal and 3 assists, or is it 3 goals and 1 assist? I'll look it up in a second. Kleschen is always an extremely dangerous passer. He pings balls from long range as through balls or as over-the-top balls, basically better than almost any player in Major League Soccer. Chances created in 2017, he led the league by a pretty wide margin. His key passes is off the charts. Dom Dwyer is two things at once. Number one, he's an extremely dangerous finisher. He had a really, really nice finish this last weekend against San Jose. The other thing is
he's really annoying.
Well, I was about to say he's as good as falling down in the box as almost any player in Major League Soccer. You can call him whiny or a crybaby. You could say, you know, he's a flopper, or you could say that he gets into dangerous positions and he finds himself getting nudged off the ball, and his balance isn't, you know, he's really moving fast and his balance isn't super good. So it's a lot of things at once, but this is a deadly team. This is a very dangerous team. We lost to them last year in Orlando. The last player you kind of like, you skated over the back line, which is totally legitimate because they've changed up a couple players. But Mohamed El Mounir is their Libyan left back, and he is, for those of you who are fantasy MLS players, he's a very reliable defensive player. He's racked up a lot of points, and he's done that by creating key passes and stopping balls. He leads on things like tackles and interceptions. So he's a really talented left back. I want to tell you one other statistic, which is worth mentioning, that'll put in kind of context how good Orlando is. So there's a statistic called XG chain, expected goals chain. So what you do is if a player takes a shot that has an extremely high percentage probability of going in, you give points, essentially, to every player in the link of the chain of passes that resulted in that play. So a player who is a central midfielder who creates that amazing through ball that results in a great chance and who does that regularly, or who even sets up the 1-2 tiki-taka down the wing.
This is a Landon Donovan statistic, essentially.
Kinda, but
this is the hockey assist stat.
Yeah, it's a statistic that really gives credit to that second or third assist. But even when it's not an assist, even when it's an amazing chance, and it was, you know, somebody who is in the midfield who unlocks the defense with that pass before the pass before the pass, or who is really an integral player in that tiki-taka down the wing, and does that 3 or 4 or 5 times a game, that creates XGC. That creates a really high XGC number. Of the top 15 players in Major League Soccer, Orlando has 3 players on top of XGC.
Can I guess who they are, Mark?
Try. Go ahead.
Okay.
Good guess.
One of them has to be Sasha Kleschen.
Kleschen is 14th.
Kleschen, okay, barely. So I'm assuming the other two have to be higher than him then, actually.
Yeah.
Ooh, is Yoshi Otune on there?
Fourth best player in Major League Soccer.
Fourth best player. Okay, who is the other one? Is this corrected based on a certain number of games played or minutes played, such that maybe a bench player wouldn't be eligible for the stat or be not as good because they haven't played as much?
XGC is like cumulative. It's like expected goals, and that okay. It keeps going up as
so. Then somebody in theory, you'd have to be a great player who doesn't play a lot to be higher than a good player who plays every minute. Then.
Playing more is better for you.
Okay, playing more is better for you then. I want to say Justin Mirren, but I feel like it's one of the young kids. Is it Mueller?
Nope, Justin Mirren.
It's Justin Mirren? Okay.
Yeah, Justin Mirren. So, yeah, Yoshi Otune is fourth in the league in XGC with 7.23. You want to guess at who's the best in the league at creating opportunities for everyone else and finishing them himself?
Best at the league at creating those.
Who's the most, you know, linky-uppy kind of player in Major League Soccer?
Linky-uppy player. It's got to be a team who scored a whole lot of goals.
Obviously.
Although
not necessarily. If you could be like, who's the team who has ridiculous expected goals and hasn't
Philadelphia
converted?
Union.
That's right. You could be poor Harris Madunian.
Nobody wants to be Harris. Okay. Lifeline, is it somebody from Atlanta?
Yes.
Miguel Amarone.
Yes.
Okay.
And the number two in the league is Albert Elise. So anyways, point being, like, this team links up really, really, really well. If they defend half decent, they were up 3-0 on San Jose, and they just kind of let in two stupid goals late. But, like, they'll just blow you out of the water, and they'll be like, yeah, defending's a thing that's kind of semi-optional for us. So Orlando's a very dangerous team, and I think it's very possible that we get shellacked by them. And I'm okay with that, actually. We are right now – these are the games we've talked about this before. These are the games where if you lose to an Eastern Conference team – It's not as big a deal as if you're mm-hmm. losing to a Western Conference team, especially early in the season. I don't want to lose, you know, but if you're a Rapids fan, if you're like me, I'm going to this game because I'm excited to see Orlando. I'm not really going to this game because I'm super excited about how the Rapids are going to play against them. I will clearly root for my home team, but, like, I like to see the beautiful soccer, and these guys, they do the beautiful soccer.
Mark, I'm a firm believer in the boxing adage of styles make fights, and for a number of reasons we've talked about, these are two very different teams. As I spoke to with a couple of players in training today, essentially, they're not really focused on what Orlando's doing. They're obviously doing their film study and seeing, okay, who are their key players? How can we go about negating what they do and do what we do well? But they are focused on playing their style of game rather than trying to stop what Orlando is doing. I think if this is a battle of whose will and whose style of play ends up taking over dominance of this game. If this is a slow, build-up-y game built on set pieces, I think that favors the Rapids. If this is a game that's back and forth with both teams creating chances, and basically if you don't convert on your chance or force a throw-in or a corner or something, you're immediately in a terrible position to defend the situation, then I think that favors Orlando. Orlando has been really good offensively on set pieces, which is why I think, especially since the Rapids gave up a goal on a set piece over the weekend, I think set pieces on both ends are going to be critical. I think the Rapids are going to have to be sharp defensively, but I also think this is an opportunity for them to get a lot of chances on there. We haven't really seen Dom Baji get on the end of a good set piece opportunity with his head. We know what Tommy Smith and Axel are able to create. I'm looking at them creating service. I think, you know, if one team can really bunker in and get a bunch of corners in succession, that favors them regardless of what's happening during the run of play. I think the other thing that's going to be interesting to see, as I mentioned, you know, the two winger players they've had, Mueller and Pino, are both relatively young. I don't know their ages, but I know both of them are MLS rookies. Pino was with Miami for a number of years, but Mueller is right out of college. They haven't been in a game where they've been truly challenged by a wide player who's going to defend them well and also make them work defensively. So I'm particularly looking at this as similar to how I think Edgar Castillo won his head-to-head matchup about a month ago against Graham Zusi. Can Edgar Castillo win that matchup that he has with them? And what are the Rapids doing it right back?
Yes, that was my next question, which is, so, you know, we didn't mention it at all, but, like, you noticed, you saw who played right back this week, right?
Well, it was Nana Boateng, and then the red card happened, and then it was like, okay, we're going 4-4-2, guys,
and then it was
4-4-1.
And then Declan Wynn pushed out to the right. But that's... I think I don't think the Rapids know who their right back is if they don't have, or their right wing back is without Marlon Hairston. Do you think they go with Emma Boateng again? Emma, I keep saying that. Not a Boateng again.
I think it's going to depend. I mean, we can just transition this into from field 20 if you want, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to hear what... So Matt was out of practice today in the snow. God bless him. Yes. I was warm and staying in a nice office today. So Matt, what did you see out of training, and can you elucidate and illuminate what's going on at right back for the Colorado Rapids?
Dylan Cerno was present. Dylan Cerno was fully engaged. Hudson said that he should be close to 100% and available for Sunday.
Cerno?
Yes, Dylan Cerno. Based on the history that we have of both the Rapids in general with this medical staff and their coaching staff and Hudson, they tend to err on the side of caution. So I think if Cerno ends up starting this game at right wing back, he will be a de facto 65th, 70th minute sub at the absolute latest. Danny Wilson was back. Danny Wilson was fully engaged in the team practice. Hudson said that he is now pain-free and he should be available for selection. If both of them are not 100% come Sunday, they will be 100% come whenever that next game is, assuming no further injury in the game against Orlando. Who else do I have? Give me some names I need to think about, Mark.
Position-wise?
Or just who else are we missing from the injury list, so to speak? Courtney Ford was in training today. He was mostly working on the side, doing sprints with the training staff. He's getting better every single week, according to Hudson, and right now he is on track. We are currently in the, I want to say, the seventh week of his reported 8 to 10 week rehab period. Not anywhere close in terms of immediate availability. He is, barring a minor miracle, he will not be available for Sunday, but I would expect him back sometime early in the month of May.
How about Marlon Hairston?
Marlon Hairston, he's progressing, but right now there's no timeline, and I would anticipate him not being available for Sunday.
Gotcha. And Stefan Aigner, what was his appearance?
Okay, Aigner, Boley, and Gashi were all available and full participating. The team had Monday off, so that would have been the 23rd of April. So this was their first game back, so it was really a light running and drill session for the starters, who then exited out early, and then a team scrimmage between the reserves. So as they did not start a whole lot, Boley, Gashi, and Aigner were all fully participated in that. At this point, they all need minutes. Hudson did say that the red card really threw a monkey wrench into the plan. The plan initially going into Saturday was that Gashi was going to be the first offensive sub, and he was going to play potentially in excess of 30 minutes. All three are expected to be available for Sunday. All three are progressing in terms of their full fitness. I would expect Gashi to be the first one off the bench. And again, barring some other crazy thing where the Rapids are up 7-0 or some teams playing with 9 men, so to speak, I would expect Gashi to be the first sub off the bench offensively, if not the first sub overall. And I would expect him to play in excess of 30 minutes at least. Yannick Boley needs minutes as well, as I addressed with one of our Twitter follows online, because I know there's been a whole bugaboo about the blow-up and everything. Mark, you know that I and Last Word on Soccer do not care for speculation or hearsay, especially when we don't have a whole lot of information on the story. It's been well reported that there was a less than harmonious verbal altercation between Aigner and Hudson 2 weeks ago now, as of the time of recording. Aigner has not seen the field since. As Hudson
said, he didn't make the 18 this week.
He hasn't made the 18 since. At this point, it comes down to performance, and the details of that, perceived or otherwise, are between Hudson and Aigner. I've asked in passing both of them about that, and they don't seem to want to talk about it.
Yeah,
so
shocking.
I'm honestly, I understand Rapids Twitter wanting information on that. I understand this in general being part of the lack of transparency that we have with Major League Soccer and the way we don't with for other sports. I'm ready to move on past this, and I think the sooner Aigner gets on the field and this can stop being something that Twitter people are bugging me about, or things that I, as a credentialed member of the press, have to ask about, the better.
Yeah, it's a good point. The transfer window for MLS closes soon, and that leads me to wonder whether there's any chance that Colorado tries to deal him. Now that Aigner has a green card and doesn't count against you for an international slot, he becomes slightly more valuable within MLS. Additionally, he's very redundant with Johan Blomberg in the ability as a midfielder to kind of serve up that really nice long over the top ball. You know, one of the things that I think is a challenge with Aigner is that he's in a position where he's got to beat Blomberg for a spot. And Blomberg is a really talented service type guy. He can pass that ball over really, really nicely. The two of them are competing for the same kind of job. And so that makes it very, very difficult. So I wonder if Porik Smith is shopping Aigner. I wonder if, you know, I'm with you. I would like to see Aigner on the field in a useful capacity. But I also kind of wonder whether he's just, you know, on the outs with the management and the team. The downside of that, of course, is that he's not, his stock isn't real high. You know, if you're selling at this point, he's you're going to sell him cheap, and that's never fun. But that being said, like, I would like to see him take the field at some point and be a useful cog in the machine.
Stefan Aigner signed a 3.5-year deal last July, so his contract is for the 2018 season through the end of the 2020 MLS regular season. His guaranteed compensation for 2017 prorated, so for the half season, was $471,000, meaning that if we prorate that roughly for what the full season was, he's potentially being paid by the Rapids $950,000. He's played 11 minutes this season. I don't know what you would get or what else you would have to give up in order to off him to another MLS team, so to speak.
You'd have to eat half of his contract at least.
And I don't know that it's worth it, given where the Rapids are as far as their TAM situation is, Mark. We're, like, as soon as the salary is going to come out, we are going to have the nerdiest MLS salary cap deep dive into the salary rules and where the Rapids are financially.
We'll have to restrain ourselves on that podcast, because we will go into the weeds. But maybe we'll figure out a way to break it up over three podcasts so we don't bore you guys to tears. Because I know some of you are like long haul truckers driving between here and Nebraska, and we don't want any of y'all to fall asleep in the middle of the drive, you know?
Yeah. So I have a hard time looking at the details of that contract, how much he's played, teams outside the Rapids not knowing where he is fitness-wise, being willing to take that on with the salary, I don't see them moving him.
The Rapids are extremely accustomed to eating salary of unproductive players. Juan Ramirez, Gabriel Torres, Edson Buttle, the Colorado Rapids have bought attacking players who didn't pan out and eaten the salary for years. So ever since I moved to Colorado, we've been the team that throws bad money after good.
In any case, I think whatever real or fabricated or perceived that's going on between Hudson and Aigner, I think the sooner that gets resolved and the sooner Aigner is a part of the 18, or at the very least is based purely on his actual performance on the field and not being in a position to help the team as much as an Enzo Martinez or Johan Blomberg or whoever he's competing against, I think the better that is for the team. I'm really sick of these questions. I'm sick of having to ask about them.
I want to move on. I shouldn't be, but I like this stuff anyways.
In any case, Mark, as I played for you right before we hit the record button, upcoming here, folks, 2 minutes between me and Zach McMath talking about the last game that he played in, his expectations for playing in Orlando, this week's preparation, and a little bit of tactical details about how the goalkeeper sees a 3-5-2 as opposed to a 4-4-2. Here's me and Zach McMath. We'll be right back. So, first of all, a little bit of an unexpected start. You know, what was your mindset having to come into the game once you realized you were coming in?
First and foremost, you know, obviously trying to stop the free kick from going in, get a save under my belt quickly, and kind of just take the game as it came. Wanted to get to halftime at 0-0 so we could have a bit of a more of a team meeting and figure out what our tactics were going to be for the second half.
What was the message from the coaching staff as you were subbing in?
Not much. I don't think...
just go stop the ball.
Yeah, just... good luck. I don't remember exactly what they said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any different approach in training to knowing that you're starting this Sunday as opposed to, you know, other weeks where it's up in the air, obviously, Tim's going in?
Yeah, I will train a little bit lighter than I usually do. I usually go pretty hard in the first couple days of the week, where as this week, I'll take it a little bit lighter and try to keep my body as fresh as possible going into Sunday.
Okay, is there any more film work or communication with the back line?
No, we'll do all that as a team and talk amongst ourselves like we always do every week with everyone involved.
Okay. Do you have a sense of what went wrong on the free kick at the end, the third goal on Saturday?
Really, he did a good job of disguising that he was going to cross it. I probably shouldn't have had three guys in the wall, and I just didn't get a good look at it from the from when he kicked it, and unfortunately just sneaks in the post.
Okay, what's different about communication or planning from a goalkeeping standpoint when you've got a three-man back line and then the wingbacks as opposed to a traditional four-man back line?
Not much. It actually helps the goalkeeper quite a bit because you've got three center backs that are kind of standing in the center of the field more than if there's two guys in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a little bit less space for them to cover, so they kind of can control it most themselves, and I'm just helping guide them.
Mm-hmm. How much communication do you have with the wingbacks, or is that different from communicating with a fullback?
Yeah, they're a little bit further away, and we ask a lot of our fullbacks, so most of my communication will be with the right and left center backs to communicate to the wingback for me.
Trevor Mallory, I think is his name. He's been in training the last couple of weeks. What's been your impressions of him?
He's been with us the last couple of years in and out of training. He's a great kid, and he's got a bright future ahead of him, and I really enjoyed training with him the last couple of years.
Thanks for your time, Zach.
Good luck on Sunday. Appreciate it.
Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. Mark, what did you think of my little conversation with Zach?
I had a blast. One of my favorite people who follows me on Twitter is Marcy McMath, which is Zach's mom. So, you know, whenever I have anything positive to say about Zach, I always get a tweet from his mom. What is better, honestly, than getting, like, having a fan who's a player's mom? I mean, I just think that that's a super, super cool thing. She's the sweetest lady in the world. So, Marcy, if you're listening, which is highly unlikely, hey, how's it going? She's out in North Carolina, I think. So,
excellent stuff. Okay, Mark, we've got a bunch of Ask HTHLs where we are at the behest of the Twitter followers. What crazy rabbit holes does the internet have us going down this week?
First one is from Tyler Maybe. Tyler came out to our office hours / wine and cheese at the C38 tailgate. And Tyler came and had a really great time with his wife, and we like to say hi to the Maybes, which is, by the way, also amazing last name.
Yep.
Maybe. How good is that? Anyhow, they asked us this question. I'm curious to what you believe the future holds for Jack McBean. Matt, what do you think? Where does Jack McBean fall in at this stage in the Rapids planning?
Boley's going to get fit and 90 minutes fit. Skelchengashi's going to get 90 minutes fit. I did not address, there's a little bit of a back issue for Joe Mason, but he's back and expected to be 100% and available for selection on Sunday, so I put him in the Dylan Serna, Danny Wilson camp for that. I think once all three of those things happen, I think at that point Jack McBean is booking his flight to Charlotte, North Carolina, and we will not see much of him the remainder of 2018. Yeah. I have been severely disappointed in his performance. I think he's been given a real opportunity to try and win something, and he's been the least impressive of the strikers that we've seen so far. And yes, I'm including now Colorado Springs switchback loanee Nicky Jackson in that conversation.
Nicky's great. I'll address it from a different angle, which is more about, you kind of hit it from a depth chart perspective. I'm going to hit it from like a ceiling perspective. Jack McBean is an entirely effective and talented USL level striker.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the physical tools at the MLS level, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? He just doesn't have the pace or the height to be a dominant, or just the physicality to be a dominant MLS player. There are players who have done more with less, but it's pretty rare, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Jack could be a really good, and I'm doing a lot of coverage also of USL right now. Jack would be a very good USL-level striker, and there's nothing wrong with that. He just probably doesn't have the tools, the first touch, the heading ability, the speed, the acceleration to be an MLS level striker, and that's okay.
He'd be great on like a League Two team fighting relegation that's just going to play Route One soccer, and he just goes up for headers all day.
Maybe. I mean, unfortunately, the other thing that's going on with Jack is that he's. I feel like he's been playing like a second underneath striker a lot. He's been expected to kind of like take a one touch ping to Baji or to go up for a ball and then to move it over to the wings to do some hold up play. And I just don't see him as doing that, and or he hasn't been good at it. More importantly, so I don't know. I just don't think he's got a long lifespan with this team, especially after they acquired Yannick Bolli. I think he was safety over the window. All right, we've got one from Jeff Casimir. Jeff asks, one commonality between Aigner and the other quote-unquote problematic Rapids players is that they're not strong English speakers. Should the team do more to get them included? In baseball, you'd sign a scrub player to be the translator. So the question is, a meta part of this question is, do the Colorado Rapids do everything they need to do to integrate players well into the team?
I don't know that that's necessarily the problem here with Aigner, Mark. Jeff, you know, you're referring to Juan Ramirez, who I'm going to assume being Argentine, was primarily a Spanish speaker. I don't remember if he came here when Oscar Perea was still the head coach, but in any case, Perea, I believe, is Venezuelan. He's fluent in Spanish. He speaks more Spanish than English with FC Dallas right now.
They had Claudio Lopez on the staff.
On the staff. Paolo Mastroianni's ancestry goes back to Argentina.
He's fluent in Spanish. Yeah.
So I don't think there's that disconnect just because everybody who Juan Ramirez would be talking with is fluent enough in Spanish to where if English was the problem, he could just converse in Spanish with them. I could see the argument made for Aigner, given that there's no other, at least on the technical staff right now. I know Hudson speaks like 3 or 4 languages. I don't think German is one of them. I'm currently looking up, loading on Mark's really slow Wi-Fi for me, the technical staff, because I know there's a technical staff person who speaks German, who was actually there when we first met Aigner for the media roundtable last August, maybe September, actually did the entire interview where they conversed in German in terms of translating for us. So I think that infrastructure is there. I don't think that there's a comparison in terms of what happened with Juan Ramirez. That's what's happening with Aigner right now. And I don't think that the problem in either of those cases was a language miscommunication issue.
Yep. I'm not going to add anything to that. I think it's all well said by Matt. I think the only thing I'll add is the problem is about going from the Du Bundesliga, the Bundesliga,
the German second division.
Yeah, the German second division to MLS, and probably being told that like you're ready to be a major contributor or a starter for this team, and then whoops, not so much. You know, I think it's probably the disappointment more than the language than anything else that he expected to be a starting player and now he's not. So yeah, that's my take. All right, Sin Hossa, longtime reader of Burgundy Wave. What's up, brother? What are your point predictions for the next 3 matches? So I'll take this one first. The Colorado Rapids face Orlando City on April 29th, Sporting at home, Sporting Kansas City away on May 6th, and New York Red Bulls at Commerce City on May 13th. So my prediction, and guys, I hope this doesn't come true. I like to be wrong. My prediction is we get 0 points from these 3 games. Orlando is a very good team. They are hot right now. They're beating good teams from the Eastern Conference. The Rapids are coming off of a rough beat. Sporting Kansas City at home are unbelievably good, and their offense is clicking on all cylinders right now. Johnny Russell murdered, absolutely eviscerated. Defenestrated.
It was WrestleMania.
It was in WrestleMania. Did you make that up?
No, that was on MLSsoccer.com.
Oh, that's so good.
I would say it was Steve Reisendine, their beat writer for SKC.
If you had made that up, you should have been knighted right there. And then the last one is the New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls are undefeated at home. So, like, and not only undefeated, they only have one at home, except for, obviously, CCL. So, I just see, if we get a point, it'll be at home against the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls don't do particularly well in Commerce City. But that would be a point or maybe three. But I'm thinking out of 9 points, we're taking either zero or one. Matt, you have a thought?
I'm going to be the boring one and say that home advantage is huge in Major League Soccer. I think the Rapids get 3 points this Sunday against Orlando on ESPN with Taylor Twellman, the 12 dog in the house. I think they lose at Sporting Kansas City because at this point Sporting Park is a death trap for pretty much anybody who isn't New York City FC. And then I say that they win against the New York Red Bulls. Wow. Before we move on, the person who I was referring to is Chris Zitterbart, Zitterbart.
I don't know
if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's a scouting coordinator, primarily a European scout, and he's fluent in German.
I saw him last week as I was walking down. Gosh, he walked by him, and they started talking in German. I was going to mention him, but I didn't want to get that German last name wrong.
Yes, so in any case, he is the, as far as I know, he's the only member of the front office who's fluent in German, and he was critical in terms of the initial communications and translation between the front office, the coaching staff, and Eigner upon signing him last summer. So I assume if there was any miscommunication and there was an issue where Eigner wasn't understanding what was happening, they would just bring in Chris, and he would translate between English and German. Okay, what next, Mark?
Last one. We have a couple more, but they're all from Sinhasa, and you only get a couple a week. So, you know, save it up, and you'll get a couple next week. Last one from Sinhasa. What is your assessment of the Rapids through 18% of this MLS season? And then he attached a GIF of Chris Farley doing... I forget the name of this guy. It's the Matt Foley motivational speaker doing his little dance, and he goes, "How do we get back on the right track? I'm Matt Foley, I'm a motivational speaker." How are the Rapids doing through 18% of the season, Matt?
I'm going to give them an incomplete because we only have 18% of the regular season data. I realize this is boring. As Hudson's reiterated, as we've talked about, this is still a team that is not quite fully fit. This is still a team getting full, trying to get healthy. And as you spoke about in your article on... around MLS that I read and thought was excellent, Mark. This is new and tactically new. It is still going to take another couple of games, if not maybe a month or even more in change, for us to see the Rapids fully healthy, fully fit, and a fully operational battle station. So I would say this is still a team that isn't even remotely close to peaking. We don't know what that looks like. Anything is possible in Major League Soccer, so I don't know that we can evaluate it in hindsight looking at how things turn out, but I don't know where this ship is completely headed, and I think it would be premature to judge them now.
I'll just add that 2-2-2 is where the record lies right now. I think it's pretty good. I give it a B+. We're still trying to figure out who we are. Like Matt said, we are still trying to figure out who everybody else in the league is. You know, like the three teams that I mentioned that we're about to go up against, Sporting is dealing with a completely new identity of being suddenly an exceedingly dangerous attacking team who they possess a little, but they defend like crap. So that's a totally different team.
But when you've got Johnny Russell, it doesn't matter. Russellmania.
Right, and Orlando was a train wreck last year, and suddenly they're one of the most dangerous teams in the East, and then you've got the Red Bulls, and you don't know what the Red Bulls are coming off of CCL because you don't know. So that's just an example, just a taste of how in flux Major League Soccer is.
There's
right
so
now.
Many MLS teams, especially in the Western Conference right now, that are unfinished products. Like,
yeah,
they are still cakes baking in the oven, and we don't know if they're going to get burned. We don't know if they're going to be amazing. We don't know if, like, the souffle is going to boil or not.
I thought Portland was hot garbage and that they were just going to disappoint all year. And then Sunday night I tuned in and watched them curb stomp New York
City
FC.
The best team in the league.
It's an absolute mystery what the Colorado Rapids are, and it's an absolute mystery what everybody else is, but I'm really pleased with 2-2-2. I think that's a solid B-plus at this point in the season.
Favorite retweet listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at Rapids Rabbi and LWS Matt Pollard. Follow us collectively through all social media platforms at Rapids 96 Podcast, and you can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com if you have a hashtag AskHTHL that doesn't really fit in 240 characters or 280 characters, and you can't find a good GIF to describe things. Check out our collective musings on the Rapids at lastwordonsoccer.com and around MLS.com. We are now officially on TuneIn.fm and the TuneIn app. We will soon be on Breaker as well, and we are also on the Radio Public app. So short of getting approved by Spotify that I am still emailing back and forth with them angrily about, we're pretty much on every single platform that you could want to find us on. If you don't like where we are or you want us to be on somewhere else, email us and check us out. But we are pretty easily we're now on enough platforms that it should be very convenient for you to find us, regardless of whether you're listening on a browser on your laptop, on your smartphone, whether that's PC or Android, Apple, or otherwise. Any other closing things, Mark?
Stand up if you hate Dom Dwyer. Stand up if you hate Dom Dwyer. Stand up if you hate Dom Dwyer. Stand up if you hate Dom Dwyer.
Listeners, we'll see you next week.